Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. Your hosts this hour are Dr. Ahn, clinical sexologist, and Xander Keg, LCSW. He's a licensed social worker. Xander will do the honors in introducing our guest this hour.
Hello, and thank you for being here today. I'm going to be introducing our guest, Ms. Toni Newman. Toni is the director of the Coalition for Justice and Equality Across Movements and the acting director for the Training Center to End the Epidemic at the National Minority AIDS Council. She was previously the interim CEO of the Black AIDS Institute and interim president of Lyric Youth Foundation. Toni is a faculty member at the Transgender Strategy Center and the chair of the board of directors for TransCanWork. She serves as the membership chair of the California Black Leadership Council. Toni was the interim director of employment services at the San Francisco LGBT Center, executive director for St. James Infirmary, and the director of development for Maitri Compassion Care AIDS Hospital. She previously served as the interim director of development communications at To Help Everyone Health and Wellness Centers, and as a strategic fundraiser, volunteer recruiter, and legislative aide for Equality California. Toni is a graduate of Wake Forest University and a current candidate for her Juris of Doctorate. That's a JD degree that's going to law school. She is a member of the National Trans Bar Association and the National LGBTQ Plus Bar Association. Additionally, Toni is a best-selling author noted for her memoir, I Rise, The Transformation of Toni Newman, released in 2011. Her memoir was based on the poem I Rise by the late Wake Forest University Reynolds Professor, Dr. Maya Angelou. She is working on her second book, Living My Authentic Life in an Unapologetic World. Well, welcome to the show, Toni.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here. I'm on holiday vacation, so I'm very well rested.
Well, that's wonderful. It's a good time of the year to be well rested. I think a lot of people are stressing out right now.
Yeah, I'm very relaxed. I'm on my first week of full vacation, so I'm enjoying myself. Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. You're very welcome. You are the director of the Coalition for Justice and Equality Across Movements and the acting director for the Training Center to End the HIV Epidemic. These are both at the National Minority AIDS Council. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the work of NMAC, and also a little bit about what you're doing and what led you to NMAC.
How I got to NMAC, I was the interim CEO of the Black AIDS Institute. The previous CEO was a member of another group of CEOs, national CEO groups that were representing the HIV population, Latin, Black, women, minority populations, which tend to have the highest numbers in 2023 with HIV. I decided that I did not want to be the permanent CEO of the Black AIDS Institute. And my fellow partner, Paul Kawada, who is the executive director of NMAC, hired me to run the National Coalition for Justice and Equality Across Movements. With all the attacks and budget cuts to HIV, to the transgender community, over 300 to 400 laws, we wanted to get national groups who were not HIV, who were not trans-related, in support of us, such as Planned Parenthood. We believe that a woman has a right to her body, her autonomy. So we support them, and we ask them to support us in promoting HIV, making sure that we let the Senate, while the House is trying to slash and cut transgender rights and HIV rights, ask them to join us, such as the NAACP and the Southern Poverty Law Center. National orgs who are not really in the trans and the HIV fields majority, we asked them to join us. And we put on a national conference with over 40 national orgs this October. It's what the coalition is about. Health equity for all, regardless of your race, sex, and gender, is our mission. And we want to stand with anyone who believes that, whether you're Black or white, straight or gay, Muslim or Jew, whatever your right is, we want to really promote that everyone, not just trans, not just HIV. Everyone in America deserves health equity, regardless of where they come from, of their race, sex, and gender. So that's really the core and the mission of the coalition, which is in its year. We just had our first annual meeting in October, and January is my first year anniversary at NMAC. I assumed in October, due to some staff changes, the Center to End the Epidemic, which are two HRSA-funded grants rounded off about 2.2 million. I run the Escalate and the Elevate teams, which are Herschel government funded on that side. And they are promoting how to end the HIV epidemic, how to end stigma in the Black and Brown communities, marginalized communities, and poor communities. I'm running two divisions at NMAC, which is the National Minority AIDS Council. So I started off as the coalition director, and I've assumed the Center to End the Epidemic as the active director due to some personnel changes. It's how I got there. The NMAC has been around since 1987, and Paul Kawada is going on his 35th year as the ED there. So they've been around, and NMAC runs the largest conference on AIDS in the United States. We'll have that conference again in September in New Orleans. 4,000 people come from all over the country and the world to our AIDS conference with scientists, HIV positive people, researchers. It's a way to bring everybody together to see what's happening, where are we at. The drug companies are there, Gilead, Merck, Veeve, all of them are there. So it's a good way to network and find out what are the new drugs, what are things coming out. We do that every year in September with at least 3,000 to 4,000 people, which is the biggest conference on AIDS in America. They've been doing that for years, way before I got there.
Did I understand then that it's the Coalition for Justice and Equality Across Movements? That's the newer
division. Five divisions in NMAC, the Center to End the Epidemic, and the Coalition is just two of those divisions under NMAC. We have prevention that's run by someone else. We have a policy team, a development team, and a conference team. Those are all divisions under the umbrella of the NMAC Corporation, okay, run by Paul Kawada, the ED going on 35 years.
Well, it sounds like this conference that you said that you had just recently, there were 40 different organizations represented.
Yeah, we had at the first annual coalition meeting, almost 40 different VPs, CEO, directors of policy. How do we work together? I'm not asking you just to support trans rights. I'm asking you to support women's rights, health rights. The common goal is health equity for everybody, whether you're gay, straight, whatever your religion, everyone deserves health equity and good quality health care. I'm a trans woman of color. I support that. I'm working for an HIV organization for people who have HIV. Yes, I support that, but we also support other things. It's bigger numbers when you bring others in. So we're not just the trans community. As you know, the trans community is quite small, regardless of what you're reading. They're less than 2% of American population. So I don't even know why they even come up in conversations, because we're so small. Why would you even bother to really get involved in what we're doing to our bodies and healthcare? But we have a group of Republicans who focused their lives on the 2% or less population, and here to fight that. Everyone deserves love. Everyone, whether you're gay or straight, Muslim or Jew, Black or white, doesn't matter. Everybody deserves health equity.
Absolutely. That sounds like very rewarding work and also very necessary work. You mentioned funding risks to HIV.
Mm-hmm.
Is that treatment, education, all of it? What are some of the funding risks in that area right now?
The Republican House, which is Republican control, you know, the Democrats control the Senate as well as the White House, have proposed to cut the HIV funding by $700 million, which would wipe out many divisions and departments and some nonprofits, which are totally government funded. It would wipe them out. We're here to make sure that the Senate puts that $700 million, which they have, and we are hoping that they will. Democrat run, and the White House has said, we have your back. It's under attack. Transgender health care, they're trying to wipe out where transgender folk can't go get health care. Certain states are banning gender-affirming care, and they're also trying to eliminate HIV funding while we're trying to end the epidemic. And the numbers are quite low, but they're still in the Black and Brown population, especially among trans women and women of color. Those numbers are still quite high. So we still have a ways to go and need funding to reach those communities in the South. Gay men are pretty good to go. They're on medication. So it's not a gay man's disease as it was classified years ago. It's now attacking straight women, trans women, people of color in the South is where the numbers are the highest. So that's why we're still fighting and need funding to keep that fight going, to make sure that we try to end the epidemic and hopefully find a cure. One day, hopefully, one day there will be a cure. But right now we have medicine that can, if you have AIDS, that can control it and moderate it. I've worked for several powerful men, white men, who who have had AIDS and been living with it for 20, 30 years. They're on their medicine, everything is going well. So I know that you can be okay if you take your meds in 2023 with HIV. And if you take PrEP, that's a good way not to get it if you would stay on PrEP. 98.5% has been proven that PrEP works. So we're trying to encourage folks that are sexually active, absolutely have sex with as many people as you like. No qualms there. Be free, you know, be explosive, but take care of yourself. You don't have to get HIV in 2023. It doesn't have to come your way if you take PrEP, and use a condom if you don't want to take PrEP. So there are ways to avoid it now where it wasn't before, and we have a lot more knowledge than we did back 20 years ago.
What do you think is the reason why there's still this gap? I remember back when it was primarily or predominantly HIV was affecting gay men. And I know they weren't the only group, but they were at the time considered the largest group. Mm-hmm. And then we went through all of the pushing and shoving with ACT UP. It was a big thing just to get the government to start paying attention. And then, of course, things started to happen. We got the Ryan White Act funding. And so, like you said, there has been a shift in who is now contracting. Would that be the proper word? Contracting HIV? Mm-hmm. That it's not really the gay man's disease anymore, because even if they do get it, there's good medications and they're taking PrEP. So mm-hmm. What do you think is the reason for this gap in the growing population now that's getting it? You said women of color in particular that are getting HIV now. What do you think is the barrier for why they're not on PrEP or they're not getting the medications? What's going on there?
You know, I think it's a lot of stigma. It has been viewed as a gay white man's disease or gay man's disease. A lot of people think, I can't get it. It's 2023, blah, blah, blah. But it is still out here. The numbers are low. The infection rate is not as high, but it's very high in the people of color and the minority community. And we have to reach out to them to not be ashamed. If you're on PrEP, you're having sex multiple times a week, you have that right. You're free to do so, but just take care of yourself. I think there's a lot of stigma still associated with HIV that then turns into AIDS. I do believe there's stigma associated with it, and people are feeling invincible. I can't get it. That's a gay thing. Even in 2023, that's a gay thing. I remember in 2004, they would, that's not us. Well, it is us. It is women of color and trans women of color and people who are having sex unprotected. AIDS has no color, no sex, no sexuality, no gender. You get with the wrong person, they have it. You can get it. Absolutely in 2023. So protect yourself. I tell people in a joke, I mean, you know, hey, I was a sex worker 25 years ago because my family had abandoned me and I was in graduate school, practically broke, trying to transition with no money. So I turned to sex work, but I always practiced safe sex. I always did. And some of my fellow ladies of the evening, shall we call them? My good girlfriends would always laugh. I would go to the 99-cent store and pick up a whole little, $4 and buy a whole bunch of condoms. And I used them relentlessly. I've never had a disease. But every friend that I've had out during that time has died, except one or two, from this disease. And it's real. And it could have been real for me, but I was just extra, extra cautious. Back 25 years ago when they were saying you should wear condoms if you have sex, I did that. I know it works. I've been in a relationship now for 20 years and been with my same partner for 20 years in LA. So if you wear a condom, if you don't like condoms, take PrEP. You have a choice here. Some people don't like the feel of a condom. Okay, I'm okay with that. Cool. How about pop a pill and take some PrEP and PrEP with water and keep it moving, and you can be as sexually active as you like. There's no judgment here. I want you to be expressive and free, but I want you to be safe. Just be safe and not, you know, get a disease. Whether that's gonorrhea, sexually you can get gonorrhea, syphilis. They've been not known to kill as many people as HIV turn into AIDS, but just not get any disease. I'm not promoting that just for HIV. I don't want you to get chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis. There are all kinds of things you can get in sexual contact. So why don't we just have fun and protect ourselves, and then we don't have to worry about it.
Well, I would imagine that this is some of the conversations that you used to have with people when you were at St. James Infirmary. I used to live in San Francisco, And I started my transition in San Francisco in 2004. And I knew, of course, about St. James Infirmary. I don't know if there were as many trans men that were accessing services there as trans women, but I know trans men were accessing services and taking advantage of being able to get items if they needed them to be safe when they were being sexual. So what was it like when you were working at St. James Infirmary? And are they still around?
Oh, what a shame. They closed this year, December of 2023. They are closing. I was back there 5 years ago. I took it over when it had some financial difficulties. They were just about at $1 million. Mayor Breed and the Board of Supervisors gave us $2.5 million. We became able to do a lot of things. And being the first Black and the first Black trans woman to run St. James, that was started by her, was just amazing. I was there almost, I think, 2.5 years. Left them in good shape. Then they got rewarded more grants and went into a co-directorship of 7 people, I'm told. They had 7 directors, and I'm not co. So I'm like, that's an uneven number. So you have 5 people say yes, 2 people say no. I don't know. I thought that was a bad idea to have 7 directors running a multi-million dollar, $2 to $3 million company. It's me, you, her, him, him. I think there's just too many voices at the table. And somehow they have winded it down and shut their doors after almost, I think, 30 years, if I'm not mistaken. A long time.
That's a lot of director salaries to be paying.
And maybe that's why they ran out of money. I don't know. I'm guessing. I love them. I was there for years. We moved into a new building, new computers, new therapy room. I left them, I thought, in pretty good shape in an FQAC across the hall. So I feel good about what I did. And then I moved on from St. James over to the Lyric Youth Foundation as their interim CEO, which is $5 million, not $2 million. So things happened, but I think a co-directorship of 7 people was probably the demise of St. James. Too many hats in the pot, too many votes, too much money going out, and not enough coming in. When you have that many people as directors and another staff of 23, you got a staff of 35, and a third of those are your directors who are the ED. I can only assume, and I'm speaking outside of the house, I never was in the house, I'm assuming that may have been the downfall. I could be wrong. That's just a guess looking out 5 years ago. What could have went wrong? I think that was probably one of the major reasons. Salaries of 7 directors running a company of 30. A third of them are the EDs. I think that's kind of crazy in my opinion. So who knows? I send love to them and wish them the best. St. James was around a long time and things must come to an end, I guess. So here we are.
Well, I hope something comes in to fill that gap.
It was the only sex worker writing school. We had sex worker bills that we helped with Scott Wiener, Senator Scott Wiener. So there was great work going on. But I think the leadership style, they wanted a more, not one ED after I left. Let's do several. I think probably we couldn't agree. Votes were made in a wrong way. 4 versus 3. Call for downfall. I'm pretty sure.
You mentioned the $700 million slash in funds. What are the other obstacles that you see that are increasing rather than going away?
The amount of hate and discrimination has rose to such a degree. You can disagree with me. I'm okay with that. We can disagree, but to try to enact laws to hurt people for no apparent reason, it baffles me to go after populations of HIV and the transgender community. What are you really getting out of that? When you talk about some of these states who are banning gender-affirming care, they have less than 300 transgender people in the state out of millions. Why are you focusing on people who are doing what is authentically right for themselves? So I'm seeing the hate and discrimination really ramp up.
We are going to take our first commercial break. Our guest this hour is Tony Newman, who is the director of the Coalition for Justice and Equality Across Movements and the acting director for the Training Center to End the Epidemic at NMAC. 2 HRSA-funded grants. HRSA stands for Health Resources and Services Administration. The grants amounted to about $2.2 million. Tony runs the Elevate and Escalate team, HRSA government funded. She also runs the 2 divisions at NMAC, which stands for National Minorities AIDS Council. If you are just joining us, we hope that you will stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. Our guest this hour, in case you are just joining us, is Tony Newman, director of the Coalition for Justice and Equality Across Movements and the acting director for the Training Center to End the Epidemic at NMAC, which stands for the National Minorities AIDS Council. We were just talking about some of the changes that have come about affecting the transgender population. We will pick up where we left off.
It's not, you're wrong. God says you're wrong. You should go to hell. Anyone who does this to their body, they're filthy. Now, we've done taken it to you don't want to fund it for your Christian beliefs to God doesn't like me. I'm not a good person. I should be in a psych ward for being transgender. Where is this coming from? I was raised in a Christian home with two Christian families, and that's why there was a 10, 15 year gap, because they believed very strongly. But we found a way to come back. After they saw that this was not a whim of mine, it wasn't something I did because I woke up and they realized it was true, we found a way to kill ourselves and coexist. All I'm asking for now is, why can't we coexist? Why can't a woman have the right to her own body? It's her body. Why do you have to tell me what to do with my body? What kind of care I should get? Why a doctor shouldn't care for someone who's transgender? Why are you doing this? I paid for my own health care because there was no Obamacare when I transitioned. I hustled and made the money to do all of the surgeries that I needed for my sex work and my work. So there was no health care for me for the Obamacare, but we do have Obamacare now, which does say gender-affirming care and mental health. And all of these things are inclusive in that. And I just don't understand the hate and discrimination. It's such hate. I mean, I was in a meeting with a Republican and his views is so distorted about transgender life. It's remarkable how the hate. And I said, could you state facts to me? What facts do you have that this is happening? There was no facts, but it was the Bible says, and this says, and that says. And my reverend and bishop told me, this is not true. Have you ever been around any transgender fan people and ate dinner with them? I'm always open for stuff like that to say, hey, I'm no different. I use the bathroom the same way you do. I have to pay taxes the same way you do. I've got a mortgage. I've got a relationship. We're really not different at all. And I don't understand the ramp up of hate towards the HIV community and to the trans community. I don't understand, why do you hate it so much and want to harm it by laws to really keep people from seeing doctors, getting medication for AIDS? I don't understand. Why would you do that? There's a lot of things I don't like, but I don't go and legislate against it. I don't know. I watch these shows. Man has six wives. I'm like, whoo, that's a lot of wives. I wouldn't do that, but I'm not going to go and legislate because that's not in my wheelhouse. They have a right to live their life any way they like. It doesn't affect me. And my question to my House representative, if it's not affecting you, why are you so involved in such small communities such as HIV and transgender, and trying to hurt us so desperately by wiping out HIV funding, by trying to fund agencies that hate transgenders and are preaching such nonsense to the public and really got people thinking we are mentally ill. And I don't understand why this is happening. I've been living as a trans woman for 30 years, and this is just a new level of hate. Even more so when I transitioned years ago, when there was no trans people on TV, I didn't get this type of hate. I mean, I got people like, we don't like you. Okay. But they weren't trying to put bills to ban me, and I can't get health care, and my doctor can't give me medication. I don't understand the degree of hate. That's what baffles me so much.
When you get your law degree, what do you hope to do?
I've been working on this degree, to be honest, for like 8 years part-time while I was CEO. I had wanted to defend in court transgender folk who had been mistreated. That was 7.5 years ago that I started. So that desire is not as strong as it was. I'm not really sure as I come to the close of it in another year, because I've been going part-time. I had to stop. I went back. I got a new job. Some of the CEO duties took me from 10 to 11 hours a day, so I couldn't do the night class. I'm not really sure on that. That's a great question, because what I intended to do 8 years ago when I was 52 is quite changed now that I'm 60. It's not the same desire that I had. I don't even know if I want to practice it, but I do want to complete it. And just to say that I put all that money in it, and my partner did most of the money. I just want to get it, but I don't know what I want to do with it now. I don't know what I take the bar and go practice. I'm not really sure, just to be honest with you, at this point. It's 8 years later, and the initial goal is not as strong as the first goal as it was when I entered taking part-time courses in a law school to get the, which is accredited by California, so I could take the California bar.
You've been involved with the Transgender Law Center, I take it.
Yeah, Shelby and I, their new ED, Mason Davis, their previous ED, and Chris, the ED before Shelby. Transgender Law Center is wonderful. They have some wonderful trans lawyers. That would not be the route I would take at this point. I don't think I would go to court. I would continue my advocacy. I like going to the Capitol, working with House members Maxine Waters, Barbara Lee, some other reps. I see now my role is more of a advocacy to help overturn, stop bills, advocate for equality at the Capitol with the House and Senate. That's more my desire, instead of going to practice and representing one trans individual at a time or group at a time. I think I could be more effective now that I've been at the Capitol. And we've had a Capitol roundtable with several House members who support trans rights. We changed a few minds, I think. We've talked to some people who now are seeing a different light. I think I'm more apt to stay in the advocacy part, have the law degree as a lawyer, able to state law more effectively and say that I am a lawyer, but do the more advocacy work on the Hill and trying to overturn bills that the House Republicans are trying to hurt HIV, the Black community, and the trans community, which I'm involved in. All three of those are my niche. So I enjoy the work at the Capitol and working on a national scene, advocating for trans rights, women's rights, Black rights, HIV rights. Those are the core issues I represent.
When you are there in the throes of the Republicans and the Democrats, are there many of you there fighting over the same issue, or is it just a few of you?
At the trans roundtable that we had this past fall, we had quite a number of transgender women and men who showed up. It was full room. The panel was 5 trans people from 5 different backgrounds, law, Tony Newman advocacy, a doctor. I had brought in 5 different people from 5 different experiences in a full room. We've got a lot of hits from that. That was quite efficient. I would love to do that in the Senate as well. And we would love to do that next year as well, to invite House members to come in and televise that so that people can see. We're just trying to get equity. I'm not asking for anything. I don't need special treatment. I think some people think, oh, these are special people. They need special treatment. I don't need special treatment. I'm a hardworking person who pays my taxes, just trying to live so-called American dream. And I think that's all that we're all trying to do, live an American dream without hate and discrimination. So that's really where I'm coming from. I don't really care if you like what I've done to my body. I don't really care if you think your God is telling me that my God is evil. I don't get involved in all of that religious stuff. I grew up in that. I think God is a God of love. I state that to them. I don't think God is telling us to kill anybody. I don't think God is telling us to go and hurt each other. I don't believe that. And that's not who I serve as a spiritual being. I'm no longer in the Christian circles because some of their beliefs that involve some type of hate. I refuse to hate and discriminate against anyone simply because they are something different than I. That's just not the doctrine that they preach, adhere to. I tell them, thank you for what God has told you, but God has told me something different. So let's just get off the God kick and move on. We could talk about that all day. My God is love, yours is hate, you want to kill, I want to help. So we could do this all day. I'm a strong warrior. So why don't we get to what's the facts? Why are you banning gender-affirming care? What have you found to be the case? You said it's harmful. I've been living 30 years with surgeries and gender-affirming care. It's not hurt me. I've lived quite well. So talk to me. I'm living it. That's how I approach them. I don't engage in arguments of religiosity and what God has told them and America. I don't get involved in that. That's their argument. One of those. God, religion is vile. Mental health, you're not mentally stable. I don't engage in that because that's opinions and everyone has a right to their own opinion. Doesn't make it so. I have opinions and my good girlfriend is that I don't think that's true, but I believe it. So what can you do? We all have beliefs, but it shouldn't be to the point of hurting folk. That's what I'm trying to say. Believe what you will, but it shouldn't go out and try to hurt and destroy and young people who are trying to come up who want to be transgender, trying to mentally stop them and they can't get care and they can't do this. There's no reason for that. And this population is not that big in America at all. We're 2.2% of the population or less in America who are transgender. I'm not saying TGNC. I'm a trans woman, so I speak mainly about the transgender community of people who classify themselves as transgender. There's less than 2% of them. I think that's what, 1.8 million Americans, which are 350 million total in America. The population is not big enough to really have this type of strife and animosity. It should be somewhere we could compromise and work this out, I think.
I think the bulk of the issue, as far as I understand it, from some of the people that I've talked to, are that it's the issues around these minors, the under 18s, that are just bringing out the mama and daddy bears in parents who are then going to school board meetings and contacting their representatives. And, you know, when I say to them something like, well, you know, as an adult who's medically transitioned and, you know, I was 39 years old and everything has worked out really well for me and my life significantly improved, they'll be like, yeah, but that some people think that's really unusual. It's not that unusual. I don't have much to say to them about the kids because that's just something that's not my history.
There's no children having sexual reassignment surgery.
Well,
this
they actually are.
14-year-old girls are turning their little vaginas into male genitalia. I don't know one 14-year-old who's had an SRS. They do the blockers. They take blockers. That is the extent that what young people are doing. They're doing blockers. They get a little blockers. They're not having bottom surgery.
Top surgery for sure.
Yeah, 13, but no 14. Bottom surgery. No. They are removing, but they're not having the genitalia. And that's what some people are going to school boards and said, oh, the little boy took his PP, turned it into a vajayjay. What doctor? Could you tell me who did it? And I don't know one that's happened to.
Yeah, no.
There are families who made that decision with their child. How dare you go into a house? You're not paying for it. You're not paying for the health care. Nothing coming out of your pocket per se to go to that. We have Obamacare, which is free health care for people under a certain level. Why are you doing this? And it's such a small number. They act like children are doing it all over the world. Millions are turning into transgender. It's an army. And it's not. We're talking, the numbers are so small.
I think what's strange is that it happens in pockets, it seems. So you can go, for example, Colorado. I don't know the numbers, of course, but across the whole state, there might be, let's just say 50. But the strange thing about it, I'm just making this up, but I'm just using an example. The strange thing about it is that maybe most of those 50, they're like in all one school or something. There does seem to be some clustering in certain schools or certain cities that if you're living in those areas, it seems like a lot more than if you look at it across the whole country. So I think that, and it makes sense to me that a parent or parents, they're narrowly focused on their kid's school or their kid's school district.
Well, they think it's contagious. They think, oh my God, you're going to go to school with Tony. Tony's trying to be a trans woman. Oh, Tony's going to get you as a boy to be a trans woman. I got news for you. No one is going to transition who doesn't really want to transition. this thing about we're out recruiting other children or recruiting them. Nobody's recruiting any young people to be transgender. It requires such amount of heart and work. You just don't do this off a whim. I don't see any 14-year-olds going to convince the whole class of 14-year-olds, you all in the wrong gender. We got to start transitioning. And that's some of the arguments that the school board is saying. Oh, this child is trying to talk to my child about transitioning. But you can't make anybody, and I'm sure you know that. You could talk to someone all night, like you should really try to transition to the other gender. They pretty much would say, I'm not going to do that. That's not in my heart. So I think there's a misconfusion that we're out recruiting as well in these areas. When you see the clusters,
remember that.
They think you're going to go out and there's two of us in the school, and now we're going to go out and get half the high school to be transgender. It'll never happen. It's such a ludicrous dream. They act like we're recruiting an army and raising them up to fight in America. That's not true. And you know that. We just want to live and be authentic. And it's so much work you have to do on yourself. You really have no other time to really focus on what others are doing. You're more focused on what you're doing for your own transition. And that's so time consuming. I don't have time to go recruit anybody. I'm worried about my own health and my own transition. So that thing about we're recruiting people, they're five in this school, it's spreading, we have to stop it. It's ludicrous. And you know you can't spread transgender transformation. That's just not something people wake up and decide, oh, today I just want to get rid of my vagina. I want to be a man. It took me 10 years to admit to myself what I was. And to tell my family, I didn't have time to recruit anybody. I was too ashamed to do it myself. It took me 10 years just to take my first pill. So I had no time to recruit at all.
No, I started to consider transition, but I didn't start it for 8 years. What do you think of this argument that at least in, let's say, in adolescence with the teenagers, teenagers are highly influenceable, right? Mm-hmm. There was an epidemic of cutting, anorexia, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was the TikTok Tourette syndrome contagion, and that in some ways we've created an environment societally that to be a cisgender person is somehow a bad thing or less of a good thing. And in order to be able to be part of the cool kids, you have to take on some sort of gender fluidity or non-binary identity because it's otherwise you're labeled as somebody who's uncool or part of an oppressor class of people, how people used to be goth or punk. I think back to when I was a teenager, I was not a follower. Nor was I really a leader. I didn't join cliques and I wasn't easily persuaded or bullied into doing anything I didn't want to do. But I saw the kids around me and some of them, they did and said things and dressed in particular ways and listened to particular music just to fit in. And I'm wondering if in some places around the country, there might be an sort of an ethos, an air in certain environments that says to fit in and be seen as progressive or cool or something like that, you should be something that's other than cisgender, whatever they call it. I use the word transsexual. Sometimes I say transgender. I don't think most, if any of those kids are going to grow up to do a medical transition. Parents and these legislators, I think they're all lumping us together. Mm-hmm. They're not differentiating between all these different trans. I don't think they know how to differentiate. And so when they go on something like X or Twitter or what I like to now call Twix, they see people on TikTok. I'm not on those platforms, but people send me little video clips from time to time. And they see people making just ridiculous, outrageous teenage kind of statements and I think they take it so seriously. You used to be able to just like disregard what a teenager was saying because they were a teenager.
Every child wants to belong.
We all
want to belong to a group. I just wanted to read something that I just looked up. So the Williams Institute in 2022, summer of 2022, did a study on 300,000 youth between the ages of 13 and 17. And they said it's approximately 1.6 million people ages 13 and older. So I'm not sure if they now are saying between 13 and 17. identify as transgender. So 0.6% of the population. But like you point out, transgender has taken on a wealth of different identities.
Yes.
We are going to take our second commercial break. If you are just joining us, we hope that you will stay tuned. We are speaking with Tony Newman, who is the director of the Coalition for Justice and Equality Across Movements, among many other roles she assumes. Let's take our second commercial break. We will pick up where we left off. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. In case you are just joining us, we are speaking with Tony Newman, who is a best-selling author noted for her memoir, I Rise, The Transformation of Tony Newman, that was released in 2011. Her memoir was based on the poem I Rise by the late Wake Forest University Reynolds professor, Dr. Maya Angelou. She is working on her second book, Living My Authentic Life in an Unapologetic World. Let's get back where we left off.
Because now we have and I'm still learning, some of my staff are non-binary. They are he on Monday, they on Wednesday, different pronoun next week. So, and I, as Xander, I was called a transsexual back in 1999. And in my mind, transgender meant that you felt that you were in the wrong body and you want to identify with the opposite gender. And you did things, whether that be medication, pills, in order to be free, that your body, not only what it felt inwardly, it looked so outwardly. That has taken on a whole new meaning 30 years later. And I agree with you, Xander. I don't have kids for that very reason. They're very unique beings and take a lot of care. Me and my husband don't have kids. I don't really speak on the under 17. I was well out of college and grad school. I wasn't a child. I wasn't allowed to transition in my home. I wasn't even allowed to be gay in my home. So I was well an adult working at a community college as an assistant to the dean way before I started transitioning. I leave that up to the parents. I really don't engage in the arguments with people who have kids. I don't have any. I don't send any kids to school. There is a good argument that Xander makes. Are we non-binary to fit in with the trans kid who may be, or gender non-conforming? Then there's non-binary. I don't know. This is the new generation Z, the younger generation. But I think we've got off track on what's truly transgender. Some people have thought, oh, they're non-binary, they're you. No. I'm transgender. They're non-binary. That's two different things. I've had a conversation with people who said, oh, the gender non-conforming or transgender. No, they're just gender non-conforming. That means they don't conform to any gender. They didn't say they were in the wrong body. I said I was in the wrong body. I had to correct it. That's a big distinction. You make good points, Xander. Way over my pay grade and educational level on what's happening with young people. But I did want to notate, I've done my homework. I know Brad Sears at the Williams Institute. There are no young people having bottom surgery. Most are doing mental health counseling, talking to a psychologist, and doing blockers. And maybe the women are doing some type of top or that type of thing. I've transitioned fully at 15. I've never heard of that. Most of these people are under doctor's care, getting cared for. I know some at Kaiser who are 17 and 18. I speak to some high school groups here in California, Los Angeles, Hollywood, who are working their way to it. They've been working their way to it for years. The doctor is working their way to it. So my knowledge is limited on what young people, what's actually happening. I think it should be left up to the parent to do what's right for their kids. I would want that to happen to my child if this is my child and this is what's best for them. I wouldn't want you to legislate what's happening in my home. That's why I draw the line. Let parents be parents unless they're unfit. Now, if you can prove that they're unfit, then that's a different story. But if they want their child to be gender nonconforming, who am I to say they can't be gender nonconforming? I don't live in that home. I'm a trans woman of color and speak from a transgender lens about transgenders in America. You were born in the wrong body and you are now trying to align internally and externally. That's what I represent. And that's what my knowledge is. It's my expertise. I'm not a gender nonconforming. I'm not non-binary. Those are not my topics, so I can't speak on those.
Well, and I appreciate that, the clarity that you give on that point, because I think it is important that we speak from our own personal experience. You've done that very well. I've done it a little bit in my interjections. It's been a true pleasure having you on the Umbrella Hour with us, Tony. One of the things that we didn't get to, so I'm going to just do it right here while we're in the show. We'd love to have you come back when you publish your second book, Living My Authentic Life in an Unapologetic World. We'd love to have you come back and talk about your book and maybe read an excerpt from it and give us a report on what, if you're doing any reading, so that we can let the listener know.
I would love to come back, and I thank you for your time today. And happy holidays, happy Kwanzaa, happy New Year, whatever you represent, I'm sending you love, whatever that is. So everyone's different, but I hope you have a good holiday. If you don't celebrate the holiday, then happy December.
Absolutely. Well said.
It was a joy having you, Tony.
Thank you, and have a great day. And
you guys as well. Thank you. We have come to the end of the Umbrella Hour. Your hosts, Dr. On and Xander Keg. Our guest this hour was Tony Newman, and we hope that you enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for listening.